Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at yourfinancialchoices.com or WDIY.org or on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services as well. Today is October 23rd, 2024. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 42,514, the NASDAQ at 18,276, and the S&P at 5,797. Tonight, ages matter in financial planning. Ages matter in financial planning. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Cindy's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. You can also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com and or show ideas, because I'm always looking for show ideas. I think I started on WDIY in 2009, so I've been doing this for 15 years here, and I had done it for a couple years prior on another station, but 15 years, so that was as of September, so I appreciate and welcome show ideas. I also appreciate and welcome callers' questions. I always feel like we all learn more by the questions you ask. So tonight, talking about age matters in planning, I did do a show with the same subject like last year, and I wondered why did I do it like almost the exact same time last year as this year? And I realized it's because of my birthday. My birthday was last week, and I think, you know, we always sit and reflect and ponder our life when we think about our birthdays and when we hit certain milestones. It makes us reflect. So I think it is important to think about our age, and I do think it becomes more and more important the older we get. But age does matter much earlier, and the earlier we consider financial planning, the better. And for anyone who's listening, who's in your, you know, retirement years or getting ready for retirement, and you have children, nieces, nephews, people around you, please encourage them to do their own financial planning and, again, start earlier, you know, which is always the better. And so we are going to start at the beginning. I do want to remind listeners, though, the last 2 weeks we did do shows on estate planning, and it is estate planning week. I was ahead of the game. So the last 2 weeks were topics of estate planning, and those podcasts are available at either of those websites, yourfinancialchoices.com or WDIY.org under public affairs. A lot of our programs are recorded and stored there, so you can always tap those and, you know, download them and listen to them like a podcast. So when talking about ages and ages mattering. This is important from birth to death. What are the important dates? More importantly, what are the important ages? And it will depend for each one of you as to when you were born. So you will have to do your own math to come up with the dates on some of these, but I will give you the ages. So when we talk about the birth, that has implications. And typically when I'm talking about these ages, we might think, oh, Lori, it's all about taxes. And as you know, I'm a CPA and I like talking about taxes. In fact, I tell people that your tax return tells a story, and it's critical, and it's kind of the measure of your financial life and does have an impact. So why shouldn't you pay attention to it? You should. And when you have, for example, a child, then that child can become a dependent on your tax return. If it's your child, or if it, you know, you have the responsibility for the child and meet the criteria to claim that child as a dependent, then there are certain benefits to you for that. And it could be back in the day, we would get an exemption for that, and may still if the tax legislation sunsets in 2026. But currently, what you get for that is a child tax credit. Again, sometimes it depends on your income, but it starts with the birth of this child. So it could be dependent care expenses, which I'll talk about in a minute, child tax credit, and you could be eligible for flexible spending account spending for dependent care. So that's the kind of things you have to pay attention to when you have a child, if you're going to have child care expenses and it giving you a tax credit. If they're under 13, when I talk about child care credit, they have to be under age 13. So for your 12-year-olds or younger dependents that you still have daycare for or aftercare expenses, if you and your spouse are working, or if a spouse is disabled, you may qualify for the child and dependent care credit. But you do need to coordinate this with the flexible spending account. So you heard me say, if you have dependent care expenses, you may be eligible for something through work if your employer provides it. It's called a flexible spending account for dependent care, where you have money taken out of your paycheck that gives you some tax savings right off the top. And it's limited, though. So if you're married filing joint, it's $5,000. If you're married filing separate, it's $2,500. So you can have a payroll deduction for those child care expenses up to $5,000. Now, your child care expenses might be $9,000, and all you can set aside through your employer plan might be $5,000. But you can reconcile this when you go to file your tax return, because your W-2 is coded to show that you had $5,000 of this dependent care expense deducted from your pay. So the IRS wants to prove that you indeed did use the money for that. So you would code your, you know, tax software, or tell your accountant that here are the daycare expenses. Here's who I paid them to. Here's their name, their address, and their employer identification number. And here's how much I paid for which dependents, one or two dependents, because that could give you additional tax credits and savings on your tax return, depending on how many kids you have. And it's up to two that you can get these special credits, and up to $6,000 for two children. Now, wait, Lori, I'm getting so confused. $6,000, you just said the flexible spending's $5,000. What are you talking about? Well, if you actually spent $9,000 for two kids and you were limited to the $5,000 through the flexible spending account, by recording the full amount that you paid, the first $5,000 you already got a tax benefit from, so that's not going to count. But I said, if you have two children, the there's a benefit up to, you know, on expenses up to $6,000. So the difference between six and five is $1,000. You might get an additional tax credit. And how much additional tax credit you get depends on how much income you have on your return. But it caps out, the credit would cap out at 20% of the dependent care costs that you're eligible for, once you reach like $43,000 of income. So if you're at $43,000, it's going to be 20%. So on $1,000, the difference between the 5 and the 6 times 20% is $200. It's an extra tax credit. So there's a form for that called Form 2441, and you have to kind of work through the numbers, but that is something that you get. And here is where that age is important, 12 and under. Once the child reaches age 13, if you have them in childcare, it's not going to count. So just make sure you know about that. And it has to be, you know, kind of a reportable thing. So I've had people say, well, I pay my aunt under the, you know, I give my aunt some cash. Well, unless aunt's reporting that, which they should be, where you'd have to be able to report Aunt's name, address, and social security number in order for you to take the credit. So you want to make sure it's an eligible provider of that child care for you to be eligible for the credit. Okay, tonight we're talking about ages, and we'll continue our discussion. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY members have exclusive access to our weekly member ticket giveaway. That's a new drawing every week for the best events the Lehigh Valley has to offer. Concerts, festivals, film screenings, theater performances, and more. Last year, WDIY gave away over 2,000 tickets to our members. So don't miss your chance. Become a WDIY member today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about age matters in your financial planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we welcome your calls, talking live with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. And I do love questions. It's my favorite part of the show. Talking about age that matters, we're going from birth to, you know, death, basically. And we've talked about as soon as someone's born, there could be, you know, entitle you to some tax credits, some dependent care expenses. So let me talk about the dependent tax credit right now, the child tax credit. This is for children under age 17, and they're eligible for a child tax credit of $2,000 per child, which applies to a qualifying child. And the qualifying child is based on age, citizenship, and of course, you know, qualifying as your dependent. And they're under age 17. There is an income phase out so that if you make too much money, you won't qualify for the credit. But under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they raise the income limits significantly. So many more people qualify for this credit than they did before. And it is a qualifying child if you meet the eligibility factors and your annual income is not more than $200,000, I think single, maybe head of household, but married filing joint is $400,000. So $400,000 for married filing joint and $200,000 for single head of household or married filing separate. And it's a $2,000 credit for children qualifying dependents under age 17. And then there's a bit of a phase out if you're over that income amount. I think it depends on how many other dependents you have. So I don't have that off the top of my head, but don't despair and think you might not be eligible for any of it. You might be eligible for part of it if you're making that kind of money subject to those phase outs. Age 18 could be important. It's the age of majority in most states and time to look at those, what we call, if any of you have UTMA accounts for your children or UGMA, Uniform Trust to Minors Act, Uniform Gifts to Minors Act. Now it's almost all UTMA accounts. Back in the day, it was UGMA accounts. Do you need to make arrangements to transfer the delivery and access to your children? Again, I think in Pennsylvania, it's age 21. So you have to be aware of that. Usually that's when the custodian would come off the account and the, you know, child can kind of take over that. Keep in mind, though, that if you do have UTMA accounts or UGMA accounts, that the income, even though you may be the custodian on the account, the income is reported in the child's social security number. So you want to watch for that. The income may still be under filing requirements for federal purposes, but Pennsylvania purposes, it's like $35. So if you make $35 of interest or dividends, your child may be subject to filing a tax return. And you may think, oh, but Pennsylvania has something called special tax forgiveness. They really wouldn't have to file. Well, no. If that child is your dependent, they have to factor in your income in deciding whether someone qualifies for special tax forgiveness. So typically with the children, they're not qualifying for special tax forgiveness if you do not qualify for special tax forgiveness. So they may be required to file a tax return to report that investment income. Now, for federal purposes, they may not have to. It depends. And they could be subject to a kiddie tax as well, which is a little bit more complicated. And you know, there's a threshold for that. And then there's some other formula if it's wages, which is earned income versus unearned income. So if their unearned income, I believe, is under like $2,500, I don't think they have to be file or subject to the kiddie tax, I should say. So you want to look at that individual case by case. Under age 19, getting a deduction for your kids, here's where you have to be careful whether that child, you heard me saying earlier, qualifying dependent, why does Lori keep saying that? Well, because there's certain rules that you have to follow to see if your child qualifies as your dependent. And once your children or other qualifying dependents turn 19, you have to start reviewing whether or not they qualify for the dependency status. They, number one, must be your child or other eligible relative younger than 19 or a full-time student under age 24 or be totally and permanently disabled. And, you know, there's some gross income test as well. But, you know, if they're on their own and they're making money and they're not in school, then they may not qualify as your dependent. So watch out for that. Under age 24, if they're now 24, they'll no longer be your qualifying child, but may qualify as a qualifying relative for the dependency exemption. And if they live with you, are related to you, and they have gross income, this is where the gross income test comes in, if they make less than $5,050. So if you're 20 years old and you're making $10,000 and you're a full-time student, your parent could still claim you. If you're not a full-time student, you're 20 years old, and you're making $10,000, I think you've missed the gross income test in that case. But that gross income test, once someone's 24, you can't be claimed as a dependent, even if you were a full-time student, if you make more than $5,050. So that's 2024 numbers. And at age 24, the kiddie tax no longer applies as well. At age 25, taxpayers with no children and low income may qualify for the earned income credit. So many people think the earned income credit applies to low income households with children. But as a single person, you may actually still qualify for an earned income tax credit if you are 25 and have no children. If you use software, typically it will automatically calculate it for you, but it is based on earned income. So the key word is earned income. And if it's below a certain threshold, it's not a lot of income to qualify for that credit, but there could be cases where, you know, someone might have graduated from college and they're having a really hard time finding a job, and they're making some money but not enough, and they're independent. They still could qualify for that tax credit, perhaps. Age 26. If you're under age 26, amounts paid for health insurance for your children age 26 and under qualifies for an income exclusion through your employer and or through the self-employed health insurance deduction. So, you know, years ago, kids would get kicked off, you know, the healthcare plans, I think, maybe like when they turned 21, it probably depended on the state or the healthcare option that you might have had. But with the Affordable Care Act, they raised the age for a dependent to be covered by a parent's health insurance to under age 26. So once you turn 26, you're no longer eligible for this benefit through, you know, employer health coverage. And it really, really was a huge benefit for young adults coming out of college, because they may not have had a job, they're kicked off the parents' health insurance. So a lot of young adults would have been walking around with no health insurance because it might have been too expensive for them, or they didn't have full employment yet. So this was a real, real safety net for a lot of people. And you can even cover your adult child, even if they're married. We had our daughter on our health insurance because she was covered up until age 26. And it was cheaper for us to have her on the health insurance because we already had a health plan for the family plan. Didn't cost us any more to have her on it, whereas it would have cost more for her to go on a plan on her own or to go on a plan with her spouse. So it worked out well. So under age 26, you can still be on parents' health insurance. And we'll continue to go through ages. important ages and ages that are going to help you in planning. And we're going to talk about some circumstances where that could make a difference and why you really have to pay attention to certain ages for sure as we work toward those retirement year ages. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions live or if you just want to give your question to Cindy and I'll take it, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about important ages in financial planning tonight. And before I continue with that, I just want to give a big shout out and thank you to all of our listeners and members who came through for our membership drive. Thank you very much. And as I was reflecting on that, as I'm watching James sit here with me every Wednesday night when he already works a ton of hours and he's here to help me with the radio show. And Cindy, of course, and Bob also, who help with the call screening. So lots of volunteers work here, so we're really appreciative of the support. So talking about some of the ages as we move into those retirement years. So we talked about, you know, when you're first born and then under 13 for childcare, dependent care expenses, and then under 17 for the child tax credit. Age 18, got to be careful, or age 21 for UTMA or UGMA, turnover of those accounts to those adult children now. Under age 19, if you're not a full-time student, your parents may not be able to claim you anymore, so you want to watch out for the rules around that because there is something called a gross income test. And, of course, that also applies under age 24 if you're not a full-time student too for the gross income test. Then kiddy tax and the earned income credit at age 25 if you're low income, and healthcare provisions to continue on a parent's policy up till age 26. So now let's talk about some of these really, really important ages when you're thinking about retiring. So age 50 is important. So people born in 1974 or before can make catch-up contributions to their IRAs, simple plans, 401ks, and 403b plans. And also qualified public safety workers are eligible to withdraw penalty-free, not income tax-free, of course, but penalty-free amounts from their government-defined benefit plan if they're retired. But age 50 can really make a difference with these catch-up contributions. I remember when they first started doing this, and it's been like over 20 years ago, I think, now. But the catch-up contributions, for example, IRAs, I think it's like an extra 1,000 or something for 2024. And for 401ks, it makes even a bigger difference. So on 2023, I'll use as an example, for under age 50, it was $22,500. For 2024, I think it's $23,000. And if you're over age 50 in 2023, it was $30,000. And if you're over age 50 in 2024, I think we're up to like $30,500. I'll have to confirm that. I have my numbers for 2023 in front of me. But it can make a big difference in your extra savings. And here's where you have to watch out, is if you're someone who just kind of maybe set it up like X number of years ago to be just kind of the same amount every month, and you didn't realize you turned age 50, I would be in complete denial as well. I try to deny it every year. So you might have said it and kind of forgotten about it. And if you have adequate cash flow and you don't need the money and you appreciate the tax deduction you might get for the contributions to the 401k, 403b, IRA, whatever it might be, you want to revisit how much you're putting away. And if you're not sure how much you're putting away, you should get access to your retirement account through work or look at your W-2 and see what you did last year. That could also apply if you have a Roth 401k option. We call that a designated Roth. But you're not getting a tax deduction in that scenario, but you might want to be able to put more money away into those retirement accounts, and that is that catch-up contribution at age 50. Here's a really critical age, age 55. People retiring or terminated in the year they turn age 55 are able to take monies out of their 401k without a 10% penalty. This, you can't do it out of an IRA. This is out of qualified plans. So why I think it's really important is if you are separated from service, and sometimes it's a surprise, it's a shock, you weren't ready for it, you didn't know, but you might still be okay, but you're not really sure, you don't know if you're going to get another job or not. If you're terminated and you're age 55 by December 31st of the year you're terminated and you have a 401k, if you have to tap that money, ordinarily, there is a 10% penalty on an early withdrawal before age 59 and a half. 10% penalty, early withdrawal, age 59 and a half, unless there's some other exception that applies. And there, 10% penalty, that's on top of the taxes you have to pay. So if you're paying 22% in tax and a 10% penalty, you're paying 32% on that withdrawal pre-age 59 and a half. If you're 55 in the year of termination and you've retained that 401k, that is an exception to the 10% penalty. So if you're 55 and you think you might need that 401k money, I suggest think about keeping it at the company in the 401k in case you need it. Quite often you're going to hear advisors say, oh, roll it over, roll it over. And I don't have a problem ordinarily rolling over money from a 401k to an IRA if we have more investment options and you get more oversight and management and interaction with your financial advisor, you know, and the cost might be comparable. So I don't have a problem with rollovers, but except when someone is under age 59 and a half and they were terminated in the year they turn 55. So you could be terminated on January 2nd of 2024 and you turn 55 by December 31st of 2024. That would be an exception to the 10% penalty if you need the money. It's really, really important. Now, I'm going to add something here because this doesn't have to do with age, but it also is an exception to a 10% penalty, and that is if you have a quadro. It's another, if you're going through a divorce and you split a 401k with a spouse and you have now a 401k that's your share of the working spouse's money, that's another exception to the 10% penalty. So I always suggest we kind of hang out there for a while until we, you know, understand the waters. We get a feel for, you know, how everything's feeling. Is the boat rocky? Are we okay? Is it smooth sailing? If it's smooth sailing, then I'm not as worried about doing rollovers. But if we think it might be a little rocky or we're really not sure if we're going to need that money, I say we kind of just sit there for a bit. So important ages and, of course, quadro. You have to understand the exceptions to the 10% penalty. So age 55, really important. You heard me say when I was explaining that an early withdrawal is pre-age 59 and a half. So what age is also next? That's very, very important. Age 59 and a half. Age 59 and a half is the normal, you know, age to be able to take money out of a retirement account without a penalty. You don't have to take it out. But you can take it out, and that would be IRA money. Now, here's the little note or footnote or asterisk on 401k money. If you are working and you have a 401k plan and you're a participant in the 401k plan, you actually have to read the summary plan description or the summary plan document for that employer's 401k plan to see if you are eligible for a distribution from the 401k, because you may not be. A normal distribution for that plan might be age 62. So if you're still working, they might not let you take money out of the 401k. So you have to read the document. But if you're no longer working, you have a 401k, and you're at 59 and a half, you can take money out without a penalty. You still have tax if it's a regular 401k, not if it's a Roth, but if it's a regular 401k, you can take money out, pay the income tax with no 10% penalty. So 59 and a half is a good milestone to hit. What comes after age 59 and a half? How about age 60? Why would age 60 be important? Age 60 would be important if you are a surviving spouse. If you lost a spouse, and you might be entitled to some Social Security. I realize I'm at the halfway point, folks, so I'm going to have to finish that part of the discussion when I come back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We are talking about age matters in your financial planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down and bring it in. Questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com, as well as show ideas. So again, 610-758-8810. We were talking about age 60, and people might not be aware of this, that if you've lost a spouse and you're age 60, you may be able to collect a widow's benefit, which would be on that deceased spouse's record. Now, there still is the income limitations, meaning if you're working and you're making $100,000, there's no point in filing for that widow's benefit, because it's still subject to income limits, meaning you have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over, you know, X amount of dollars. I think it's like $43,000 or something. So you might not get any of that widow's benefit. So you want to, you know, talk to Social Security about that if you might be eligible and you think your income might be within a range where you could get something. You could collect the widow's benefit at age 60. And you could defer your own benefit if you were working. So I just was talking to a colleague about this today, and I've had a number of spouses who have done that because the surviving spouse was actually the higher earning spouse, and they can defer their benefit longer, earn a premium on it during that period while they're collecting their deceased spouse's benefit. So that starts at age 60. So you might do it at age 62. You might start it at 63, 64, and defer your own until 70. You'd want to play with the numbers and understand your cash flow needs and your health and all of that. But that could make a difference and allow you to have a little bit of cash flow while you're building up your own benefit at that premium. All right, so age 60. Now, there are other rules around Social Security. If you did have a deceased spouse and you have children at home, minor children, you know, in high school still or younger, where there's a family benefit, so the kids can collect something and the surviving spouse can collect something in that circumstance. But let's say the kids are now out of high school and you're only 58, then there's going to be a couple years where you're not going to be able to collect. But then at age 60, you could say, hey, can I get my survivor's benefit now? 62 is what we call the early Social Security age. But keep in mind, you take a haircut on the benefit, and it's like a permanent haircut. And how I try to explain Social Security to people is your work record has earned you a bucket of money, and that bucket of money has a value today. And if you go to file for a benefit today, they're going to say, okay, you're 62 now, and the life expectancy might be, you know, 20 years. And we're going to pay you a smaller amount for 20 years. So you're going to take a haircut. Your benefit's going to seem like it's reduced, but it's for 20 years in this story based on, you know, your life expectancy. If you waited till, let's say, full retirement age, and if full retirement age is 67, that's 5 years later. So you didn't collect anything for 5 years. You waited till 67. They don't give you a haircut. You're collecting your full retirement age benefit, your primary insurance amount. These are terms you're going to see on Social Security's website, FRA and PIA, primary insurance amount, full retirement age benefit. At age 67, you're going to collect your full benefit. And now your life expectancy wasn't 20 years, it's now maybe 15 years. So, and if you wait till 70, you get a premium. They encourage you to wait longer by giving you this little premium to age 70. Well, then at age 70, you're collecting even a higher benefit, but again, for a shorter period of time. So they basically are spreading this bucket of money that they've deemed you to have earned over your life expectancy. So smaller amounts for a longer period of time or bigger amounts for a shorter period of time. In theory, it shouldn't really matter. But perhaps you're someone who doesn't really need the money, and maybe you decide to collect because there could be health issues in your family. You're not sure if you're going to live to that life expectancy. You don't know. And maybe you don't need the money. You could take it and invest it, and you might be further ahead. May or may not be further ahead. We don't know. Because you also may not be subject to the higher benefit, getting a COLA adjustment, which is a COLA adjustment on a higher benefit. So you kind of lock in your benefit amount once you start collecting. All right. So that is age 62. And then, of course, the full retirement age. I said probably 67. Some people's full retirement age years ago was 65. Then it was 66, 66 in 1 month, 66 in 2 months, 66 in 3 months. Depends on when you were born. And now it's basically full retirement age is now age 67. But I don't want to skip over age 65. Age 65 is critical, and more critical than you might even realize, for Medicare. Medicare, or for, it could be, you know, if you're disabled as well. But you if you're deferring your Social Security, you're going to wait to collect your Social Security because you want to wait till full retirement age. Well, I said that was 67 because they've raised the full retirement age. It used to coincide, I believe, with the Medicare age. Medicare age is 65, full retirement age 67. How do you pay for Medicare? Typically, you're paying for Medicare out of your Social Security payment. Well, if I don't file for Social Security, how do I pay? Well, you have to make arrangements to pay, provide, you know, payment for the Medicare if you don't have other qualified health insurance. So if you have stopped working, a spouse has stopped working, and you don't have what we call otherwise qualified health insurance, at age 65, you have to go on Medicare. If you don't, well, you don't have to, but if you don't go on Medicare and you try to go on it later, there's huge penalties that are ongoing that you can't get out of, and it goes forever. So at age 65, if you are 65 and not collecting Social Security, you need to notify Medicare and make arrangements to pay for Medicare. Part A is hospital insurance. You don't have to pay for that. And Part B is the, you know, the medical insurance, doctors, that kind of thing. And Part B usually covers about 80% of the cost of your health, you know, needs. And you have to get a supplemental plan typically to cover the other 20%. And that is what Part B is. That's what you're paying for. That's what you have to apply for at age 65. Unless, again, you have that other qualified health insurance. So watch out for that. Now, you might think, well, one spouse might be 65 and the other spouse might still be working. And you could think, well, golly, you know, the premiums on Medicare are only like $172. That sounds pretty good. Remember, you'd have to also get a supplemental insurance. Maybe I'll go on Medicare and, you know, I'll go off my spouse's health insurance. Well, if your spouse is still working and making a boatload of money, then your Medicare premiums could be higher than the $172. So be careful of that. For people who've never been on Medicare before, and this is like your first rodeo thinking about Medicare premiums, Several years ago, they started adjusting them based on income, and they look back 2 years. So, for example, your 2024 income is going to dictate what your 2026 Medicare premiums will be. So if you make, you know, $500,000 a year in 2024, your 2026 Medicare premium is going to skyrocket because they look back to the 2024 income. Now, if you've had a life event, like you retired in 2026, and so you're not going to have $500,000 of income anymore, you can send an application to Medicare for, you know, abatement of that easement. It's called an SSA-44, and say, hey, Medicare, by the way, I've had a life event. One of us retired, or we had a reduction in work stoppage. You know, there's loss of spouse, gain of spouse, whatever it might be, life event. And you can let them know what happened and what the anticipated income is, and they can adjust the Medicare premium. Now, if you screwed up and it's like, whoops, I thought I wasn't going to have any income, but I did still have tons of income, they're going to catch up to you, and they're probably going to come back and bill you for that. Or I don't know how they do it, but they probably will come back and get those extra premiums from you. So watch out for that, because you don't want the penalty for not applying appropriately. And you need to do that a few months before you would need it. I know my husband, I think, notified them that he had qualified health insurance through me when he retired. So we didn't go the Medicare route because I have health insurance at work that was a better price. So that is age 65. Let's talk about age. I mentioned 70. I don't want to skip over that. Age 70 is that age that you can defer your Social Security till age 70. You get like an 8% premium from the full retirement age benefit to age 70, 8% premium each year. You can really build up a Social Security benefit. But once you reach age 70, there's no further buildup. So you might as well file by age 70. If you haven't already filed, you might as well file. And keep in mind that if you have a spouse and your spouse was collecting on their own record while you were still working, and that spouse's own record might have been some small amount, $300 a month, $1,000 a month, and now you are filing at age 70, which makes your spouse eligible to file for a spousal benefit if it's higher, you need to let Social Security know that and say, hey, Social Security, my spouse has been collecting on her own record all these years, $300 a month. Now I'm filing for my benefit. Now my spouse would like to switch over from her own record to her spousal record, which may or may not be higher. And if it's higher, we'll pay her the higher amount, or him the higher amount. And you might think the rule of thumb people would always say is, oh, my, you know, I'm going to get half my spouse's benefit. So my spousal benefit is half of the, you know, higher worker's benefit. But it's not exactly that, because when you are claiming on a spouse, the spousal benefit, it is based on the PIA amount, the primary insurance amount. You heard me say that earlier. This is why these terms are important. So if at 67, I told you, was my primary insurance amount, if it was $3,000 and now that spouse is, you know, collecting Social Security, half of that would be $1,500. But if I was collecting on my own record and I was getting the $300, I could step up to the $1,500 if I also filed at full retirement age. If I filed for my own record early, remember I said if you file early, you take a bit of a haircut, a bit of a discount because you're collecting longer. That discount or haircut continues to apply. So just watch out for that. You may not get the full half that you think you're getting. So don't go spend it yet. You have to understand what it's going to mean to collect your spousal benefit if you, in fact, collected earlier than your full retirement age. So there could be a bigger haircut on that than you think. So these are important terms to know, important numbers to know. You can go on SSA.gov, Social Security's website, SSA.gov, set up a My Account, and to determine what your Social Security benefits are. If you log in and set up the security and everything like that, you can, you know, look at it regularly. And, you know, they used to mail those out. I don't know if they even mail them out anymore. But that's how you can get the information on your benefit and what you might be eligible for. Folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY News engages the Lehigh Valley with accurate, unbiased reporting from many sources and volunteer real voices. Listen to WDIY News during Morning Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition every day here on 88.1 FM, streaming on WDIY.org and the WDIY phone app. WDIY, many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here in WDIY. Phone number 610-758-8810. And questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. We are talking about ages and the importance of ages in your financial planning, to know these little tips and tricks in case they may apply to you. Quite often, I feel that people don't pay attention to this kind of information until it applies to them or until it's applicable to them. And chances are sometimes they don't even know about it. So you have to be very careful of who you're working with when you're either doing tax preparation or financial planning or tax planning. You just have to make sure you kind of, or even Social Security planning, retirement planning. It's really important to know these milestones as they may apply to you and offer you flexibility and options in your cash flow and tax planning. So we've moved from age 70 to now age 70 and a half. Age 70 and a half, why is that important? It used to be the required minimum distribution age. So recall that retirement accounts, while we're working, we have been given an incentive to put money into retirement accounts. The income that we set aside is deferred from income tax because eventually when we take that money out and the growth on that money is going to be income taxable to us in retirement, typically or hopefully when we're in a lower tax bracket. So the idea is defer when we're in high tax brackets, take it out when you're in a low tax bracket. So, but at some point, the IRS wants their money, wants their tax revenue, and that's why they came up with this minimum required distribution, MRD, or RMD, required minimum distribution. People switch those words around all the time. So the required minimum distribution used to be age 70 and a half, and several years ago, they also came up with an additional tax incentive for people that if you were to contribute to a 501c3 out of your IRA directly, you could not have to report that distribution as taxable income. So if I have a required minimum distribution of $10,000 and I decide to give $10,000 to my church, I would get a tax document saying I took a $10,000 distribution from my IRA. But guess what? I'm 70 and a half. It qualifies for a charitable deduction. I did it directly out of my IRA. Therefore, the $10,000 is not included as taxable income on my tax return. It's called a qualified charitable distribution, a QCD. Lots of little acronyms tonight or abbreviations. So QCD, qualified charitable distribution, that begins at age 70 and a half and not a day before. So that was the old required minimum distribution age. When they raised the required minimum distribution age, which they've done twice already and have planned for a third one, they've raised the required minimum distribution age to 72. Then they raised the required minimum distribution to age 73. So you don't have to take money out of your IRA until age 73 now. But if you are someone who has an IRA and is charitably inclined, you could take the money out of the IRA at 70 and a half and give it to charity directly, and you don't have to pay tax on that money. So you can do it before age 73. You're just not required to take any money out until 73. So a lot of times I like to, for people to wait until they have to take the money out because, you know, why not get the deduction then? And the amount that you can do is up to $105,000 now. If your required minimum distribution is 10, you could do 10. If it's your required minimum distribution is 5, you could do 5. If your required minimum distribution is 10, you could do 2,000. You could do 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. If your required minimum distribution is 10,000, you could do $105,000. All right. So you don't have to do all of your RMD. You could do part of your RMD. You could do all of your RMD, or you could do more than your RMD, up to $105,000 per person. And it's a great way to give money to charity because they do not pay income tax on that. And you're not going to pay income tax on it either. If you thought, I'll take the money out, put it in my bank account, because I like writing the checks to the church, I like putting in the weekly envelope. Well, if you're taking it out of your bank account, that's not going to count as a qualified charitable distribution. And chances are you may not even be able to get a deduction for that because the standard deduction is so high these days that people aren't getting a benefit from their charitable giving. So we have to find other ways around tax benefits for charitable giving, which I covered, I think, 3 weeks ago. So there was a podcast on charitable giving, I think, 3 weeks ago on WDIY or on Your Financial Choices if you want more information on how to give and get some tax savings. So 70 and a half is that age for qualified charitable distributions. The required minimum distribution age is now 73, and here's the third one. So I said they went from 70 and a half to 72 to 73. They're going to age 75. So for people who are born, I think, 1958, because by 2033, the required minimum distribution age is going to be 75. We're going to talk a little bit about planning in just a second, but, you know, just because it's 75 doesn't mean you have to wait till then. It's just that's the required minimum distribution. They want you don't have a choice to wait anymore. You have to take it by then. You can always take it sooner. But when taking it sooner, remember those other ages that I mentioned that were so important. You don't want to do it before 59 and a half because you might have an early withdrawal penalty of 10% unless an exception applies. So between 59 and a half and required minimum distribution age, you can take out of your IRA with no penalty, you know, whatever amount you want. Why would you do that? You might do it because you need the money. You might need it for cash flow. Or maybe you don't need it, so you're taking it out and converting it to a Roth IRA. So you can always do that too. So you want to play with those numbers. And by the way, you don't have to be 59 and a half to do a conversion. I could do I keep thinking I'm younger than I am. If I was 30 years old, I could do a conversion from an IRA to a Roth. You can do that at any time, and there's no income limit on that. All right. There used to be an income limit on it, but there is no income limit on it any longer. So you could convert $5 million if you wanted. And some people are converting $5 million when they have large IRAs and huge estates, and they're worried about a federal estate tax that may or may not apply to them. So it could be estate planning reasons that they do big conversions like that. All right. So age 75 by the year 2033, so 1958. And those qualified charitable distributions that I mentioned at age 70 and a half, that does not apply to 401ks or 403bs. That is only for IRAs, all right? Only for IRAs. Keep that in mind. But it's a great planning technique. I also started the show by saying important ages, age, you know, from birth to death. And here's where the death comes in. I can't tell you what age that's going to happen. It's up in the air. But I will tell you some comments I've heard from certain people where they say, oh, yeah, you know, well, I can do the charity when I die. Well, you can if you set it up that way. So I've seen where I sometimes see charitable specific gifts in a will to a charity, $10,000 to my church, $10,000 to the animal shelter, $10,000 to the children's home, $30,000 of cash off the top of the estate. Number one, there may not be an estate depending on how you've set up your assets. If they're all non-probate, then it's not going through the estate and those charities may never see that money. Number two, if you do have an estate and there's money there and you also have the rest of the estate going to your spouse or your children, specific gifts come off the top first and to the charities and in that story. And that's cash that your loved ones may not get, but you happen to name your loved ones as beneficiaries of the retirement accounts. So now your beneficiaries are going to get the taxable accounts and pay income tax on that money where the charities were getting the cash. That doesn't sound like such a great deal. You can work it out that the charities might be residual, you know, percentage beneficiaries on an IRA account, or you carve out $30,000 in a separate IRA account and slap the charity's names as beneficiaries of that IRA account. And when you die, that account goes to those charities income tax free. And now your heirs, your spouse, or your kids get the $30,000 cash instead of getting a $30,000 taxable IRA. All right. So watch out for that. So birth to death. Again, death is the only age I can't totally predict for you. But sorry, I'm very practical about these things. So don't wait until you die to think your planning is going to be implemented. You have to think about that actually before. And because we don't know what age that's going to happen, why not do it today? I can't stress enough the importance of estate planning. We had Pete Iorio, attorney from Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Bubon, a couple weeks ago. That podcast is available on the sites I mentioned, WDIY and Your Financial Choices. And then last week, I did like a recap of some of those important elements and what you have to pay attention to. I'm a strong advocate for estate planning. I always say if you plan, nothing happens, or plan while you can, and where there's a will, there's a way. So really important. I can't stress it enough. But part of that planning also factors into all of these other elements I mentioned this evening. Starting early, being aware of these very important ages and how they impact you and where it can make a difference, because it just breaks my heart to see people who might be terminated at age 55 and someone advises them to roll over money to an IRA, then they need the money and they're subject to a 10% penalty. It just breaks my heart. So you have to really be aware of these ages. Or you see a surviving spouse struggling and they didn't realize that they would have qualified for a widow's benefit. There's also benefits for, you know, divorced spouses as well that may impact you for on Social Security if you haven't remarried and you might have qualify for a spousal benefit from that divorced spouse. So you always have to retain that information as well, you know, the Social Security number and the information for that spouse that you separated from. I think you had to be married maybe 10 years. Different rules if the spouse is deceased, but if you were divorced, there's certain rules that you have to be aware of as well. So if those ages might hit a chord with you, pay attention, do your planning, be proactive in your planning, work on it ahead of time. Make sure that you're aware of what might apply for you. I will also mention, too, there are certain rules around Roth IRAs as well and distributions from Roth IRAs. If you do a conversion, each year you do a conversion, there's a new clock that sets. It's 5 years. But if you've done regular Roth IRA contributions over the years, as soon as you establish the account, that sets the clock for that. And it's the longer to take out the earnings is the longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years, you can take out the earnings without any penalties on that. But prior to age 59 and a half and or those 5 years, you can always take out your original contributions on a Roth that you've made regular contributions to. So those are some important ages as well. So I hope this has helped tonight. Next week, I'm going to talk, it's because in understanding that Halloween's coming up, not one of my favorite holidays, but I think scary. So scary not knowing what questions to ask about your financial life. So next week, I'm going to try to talk about some of those questions that you don't know to ask, maybe. Maybe you do know to ask, but why are we asking them and what are you looking for? And I think it's really important to educate yourself and kind of, I always say that my favorite questions are the ones you don't know to ask. So we're going to start to try to talk about some of those because it could be scary not knowing what those questions might be. Thank you, James, for being here. Thank you, Cindy, for being here. Again, thank you, listeners, for your contributions to our WDIY membership drive. We really appreciate it. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.